This week on Making Contact.
You can say that in the popular neighborhoods right now, there is systematic repression. The international community must tell this current government that they are going too far.
Nearly 1 year after the United States Marines ushered former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide from the country, Haiti has sunk into an ever-deepening despair. On this edition, correspondent Reed Lindsay takes a look at the offensive launched by the U.S.-backed Haitian government against supporters of the former president. We'll examine the return of the feared Haitian military and see how the United Nations peacekeeping force is turning a blind eye to state-sponsored human rights abuses. And we'll hear from Haiti's poor, who have been the hardest hit by the change in government. I'm Amy Pomerleau, your host on Making Contact, an international radio program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information.
It's late afternoon on Sunday in downtown Port-au-Prince, one of 2 days a week when water flows for a short time from public faucets on Saint-Martin Street. Women and children fill plastic buckets to the rim and then walk home with the buckets on their heads past five-foot-high piles of smoldering garbage and the rusted carcasses of burnt cars. The street blockades were made by supporters of former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide to prevent the Haitian National Police from entering the neighborhood. But there is almost always more than one way into the maze of winding roads and back alleys of Port-au-Prince's downtown slums. At 4 o'clock this morning, the police used another entrance to stage an operation in an area known as Corridor Basia. Up a steep alleyway in Corridor Basia, people say they are still in shock after black-clad police raided the neighborhood, breaking down doors and shooting at residents. They say this is the third time the police have come in the last month.
The first time they beat people and killed 11. The second time, they set fire to houses below, and this morning they came again. They killed again. Our own brother has been shot.
This woman's brother, 18-year-old Lucien, lies quietly on the floor in a sparse room of a second-story cinder block building. Two blood-stained bandages are crudely taped to his right chest and back, marking the path of a bullet that ripped through his body. It has been 6 hours since police shot Lucien, who unwittingly went to the roof of the building to urinate while the operation was taking place. His body trembles and he asks for water in a faint voice. His sister says he has lost lots of blood, but she refuses to take him to the hospital, fearing that the police will find him there and kill him.
I don't know why they do this. They just appear and break and destroy everything. They ask for people who have guns, but we don't know anyone who has guns. If you don't tell them people have guns, they beat you, they shoot you.
Lucien's sister says she wants United Nations peacekeepers to take him to a doctor, but it's Sunday and none have been seen in the neighborhood today. Outside, a crowd gathers around pools of dried blood that stain the street below. A bleary-eyed man smoking a cigarette stumbles toward the crowd.
I don't know what's going on in this country. I spent so much money on him. The child was sick. 3 years ago he was sick. He had typhoid and malaria.
Guy Bosse speaks in incoherent spurts. He has just identified his dead son at the morgue.
They took him from his house. They brought him over there and they shot him.
Since U.S. Marines escorted former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide from Haiti 1 year ago, the interim government of Prime Minister Gerard Latortue has launched an offensive in the poor neighborhoods of Port-au-Prince in search of armed groups of young men referred to disparagingly as chimères. Some of these groups are composed of die-hard members of Aristide's Lavalas party who have lost government jobs or other benefits since his ouster. Demanding the former president's return, they have burned cars, blocked streets with flaming tires, shot in the air in crowded markets, and clashed with the police. Other groups say they are fighting for Aristide's return, but seem more interested in committing crimes and obtaining power. Still others are merely criminal gangs with no apparent political affiliations or objectives. Government officials and police officers lump all these groups together. They call them bandits, terrorists, chimères, Lavalas. They accuse them of killing more than 20 police officers since late September 2004. They blame Aristide for fomenting violence from his exile in South Africa. With the backing of the United States and nearly 8,000 United Nations peacekeeping troops, La Tortue has made rooting these armed groups out of the slums of Port-au-Prince a top priority of his administration. Jesse Kwaku is spokesperson for Haiti's National Police.
The specific problem is with all those who are creating disorder in the population. Those who illegally possess weapons and who are always shooting, these are the people the police are against, whatever their names are.
The thumping propellers of a United Nations peacekeeping helicopter echo through the maze of twisting alleyways in the poor neighborhood of Bel Air, a stronghold of Aristide supporters opposed to the current government. Gunfire crackles through Bel Air and the surrounding neighborhoods nearly every day, despite the regular patrols of Brazilian and Pakistani peacekeepers. Several young men who had been smoking marijuana scamper down an alleyway as three armored personal carriers, or APCs, carrying heavily armed Brazilian troops lumber down the main street in Bel Air. Less than 100 yards away, a dozen members of an armed anti-government group called the Popular Base Resistance Movement gather in their headquarters, a sparse, dirt-floored room with a corrugated sheet metal roof. Samba Bukman, a wiry man with a goatee and a knitted Rasta cap holding his dreadlocks, is the group's spokesperson. He vows that presidential elections planned for next November will not occur unless Aristide is allowed to return.
If Aristide cannot return, the country will not function. They will have to kill all of us in the popular neighborhoods. All of us in the popular neighborhoods are resigned to our fate from Cité Soleil, Bel Air, Grand Ravine. We will all come together. They are killing us one by one. We are one, and we will die as one.
A security guard armed with a shotgun opens the gate to the house of millionaire Haitian factory owner André Appède. Appède is the founder and leader of Group 184, a coalition of organizations that helped push Aristide from power and played an important role in forming the current interim government.
You want democracy, you cannot have this kind of occult criminal machine in place to terrorize. We call the bluff. After he left, the machine was in place. So it's like a dying machine, a dying animal, which when it kicks, I mean, when the animal is alive and confident, it doesn't kick. It doesn't bite with rage. The dying animal today is kicking and biting with rage.
Human rights groups have documented an escalation of state-sponsored abuses targeted at members of Aristide's Lavalas party and at the people who live in the poor neighborhoods where support for the former president continues to run high. In November 2004, Amnesty International denounced arbitrary arrests, illegal detentions, and summary executions allegedly committed by police officers. The jails, emptied last February 2004 by the rebelling former soldiers who helped force Aristide from power, are now packed again.
You can say that in the popular neighborhoods right now, there is systematic repression. The international community must tell this current government that they are going too far.
Jean-Sénat Fleury weathered 18 years of dictatorship and democracy as a federal judge in Haiti's judiciary system. Fleury said he was pushed out because he ordered the release of Father Gerard Jean-Just, a Catholic priest and Aristide ally whom the government had imprisoned on charges of hiding criminals.
The basis for the arrest of Jean-Just is a political question. The basis for the arrests being made in popular neighborhoods is also a political question. At the approach of elections, the people from popular neighborhoods represent a decisive electorate. They are persecuted, so they won't vote.
So far, the UN peacekeeping mission in Haiti has turned a blind eye to many of these abuses. Often, UN civilian police and soldiers are unaware when the Haitian police are raiding poor neighborhoods just a few blocks from where they are stationed. And the UN forces have participated in major police sweeps in these pro-Aristide neighborhoods, in which homes are searched and suspected criminals are rounded up and imprisoned. Aristide became Haiti's first democratically elected president in 1991. A former Catholic priest whose parish was in a slum of downtown Port-au-Prince, Aristide was hugely popular among the poor. But he was feared and hated by Haiti's tiny elite and distrusted by the U.S. government. Less than 8 months after being elected president, he was ousted in a military coup. The military regime ruled for 3 years. Thousands of dissidents and other victims were murdered by soldiers and a paramilitary group formed in 1993 that was known as FRAP. After Aristide came back to power in 1994, he disbanded the military and formed a truth commission that looked into past abuses. Less than a decade later, a group of former soldiers crossed the border from the Dominican Republic and seized control of most of the country. On February 29, 2004, as they closed in on Port-au-Prince and threatened to attack, the U.S. Marines put Aristide on a plane and flew him to exile in the Central African Republic. Aristide said he was kidnapped and called his removal from power a coup. U.S. government officials said he resigned. 1 year later, the former soldiers who helped oust Aristide act as the de facto law enforcement throughout much of Haiti. It's raining in the northern city of Cap-Haïtien, and water drips through dozens of cracks in Mamotte Bien-Aimée's rusted sheet metal roof in the slum of La Fossette. Outside her cinder block home, the streets are thick with mud and floating garbage piles up in a rancid canal. Bien-Aimée says she hasn't had enough money to fix the roof, especially since she stopped selling used clothes on the street 4 months ago. Wholesale prices had risen too high, she says, and at the same time, her customers dwindled. Now she depends on gifts of food from neighbors and family. The high school where her 17 and 21-year-old son studied has turned them away because she owes too much money.
Where will they find a job? I'm their mother, and I can't find a job to take care of them.
Bien-Aimée says her situation began going downhill when the former military invaded Cap-Haïtien on February 22nd. The following day, her 29-year-old sister was shot and killed by soldiers while she tended her laundry.
We're still breathing, but after they killed Mimine, I'm not in good health. After they killed her, I was in shock. Since then, I haven't been well. I have terrible headaches.
Bien-Aimée voted for Aristide last time. But like many poor Haitians, she says she won't vote again.
I don't want to die like Mimine.
The Haitian army is back. And I think people are always referring to them as the rebels. But the reality is that they were the Haitian army.
American Douglas Perlitz has run a home for street children in Cap-Haïtien for more than 8 years.
The army represents an incredible amount of fear. And to even have the United States and the world acknowledge them and not as having any kind of legitimacy in Haiti, I think is a slap in the face of all that's gone on in Haiti. It's a slap in the face of the poor, slap in the face of democracy, because people are not going to be serious about voting again if they see that these guys who are known killers are running around with their guns.
UN peacekeepers say they are under orders to avoid confronting the soldiers, even as they help the police raid poor neighborhoods in search of illegal arms. When the former military seized Aristide's abandoned residence in Port-au-Prince, the UN drove them away and temporarily detained some 50 soldiers. But they were later released, and the cash-strapped government caved in to one of their principal demands, the payment of nearly $5,000 in back salaries to each of some 6,000 former troops.
We consider that we have two threats in this country from illegal armed groups. One of them comes from the different gangs, criminal, political, criminal, or political, who act in shantytowns, and the other comes from the former military.
Juan Gabriel Valdez is chief of the UN peacekeeping mission in Haiti.
While the Chimere and the groups, the criminal groups in the shantytowns, attack the population, rape women, rob or attack or burn places, businesses, and they are a threat to security in an immediate term. The other groups keep weapons, have occupied commissariats, but they are much more an instability threat than a security threat. We have no reports of members of the former army attacking the population or giving weapons to children, for instance.
A third armed group has gotten less attention. Since last October, human rights observers have documented more than a dozen cases of summary executions in poor neighborhoods of Port-au-Prince. Witnesses describe black-clad, hooded gunmen who appear to be police officers. Most of the victims have been young men from the slums, and witnesses have identified some as street kids. None were public figures until the murder of Abdias Jean, a journalist with a Miami radio station who was killed on January 14th near his home in a slum called God's Village. Witnesses say police forced Jean into the street from a house where he was eating and executed him less than a block away. The police have denied responsibility, and some observers have speculated whether former members of the military or FRAP are involved in the killings. The UN civilian police have opened an investigation, but the executions have received sparse attention from the largely anti-Aristide media. Guiller C. Delva is the president of the Association of Haitian Journalists.
Before, under Aristide, for any little attack, any little act of intimidation was denounced. You know, it was a scandal. It was, you know, everybody was condemning it. And that prevented the situation from escalating. But now, you imagine under Aristide, a journalist would be killed. Under Aristide, the country would stop functioning. It would stop because everybody would talk about nothing else, just that. Now, almost nobody is talking about it.
We'll have more about Haiti in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org.
At the edge of the airport, the sprawling slum of Cité Soleil was a hotbed of activism during the pro-democracy movement that swept Haiti in the 1980s. Now, it is a lawless battlefield as rival gangs shoot each other and extort, rape, and kill residents. All of them once supported Aristide, but one gang leader, Le Bagnier, turned against the former president in 2003. The slum was divided in two. Last September, the war between the gangs escalated and the slum was engulfed in violence. For more than 2 months, police were afraid to enter and an unknown number of families fled. Businesses and schools were shuttered and Cité Soleil's only hospital was closed indefinitely. UN peacekeepers occupied Cité Soleil in December, putting an end to much of the violence. But the gang leaders are still at large and, according to some residents, expected aid has not arrived. Franklin is a community activist who lives in the part of Cité Soleil that is controlled by pro-Aristide gangs.
The United Nations has lots of money. They've got a huge budget. If you see they're not doing anything for us, it's because they're solving the problems of the bourgeois. They don't want to do anything for the popular masses. They have all the means.
Franklin's house was among more than 100 that were burned to the ground by FRAP in 1993 in an attempt to stamp out pro-Aristide activism. Franklin says he is grateful to the Lavalas government, which built new apartments for the arson victims in 1995. But he is critical of the armed pro-Aristide gangs that now roam his neighborhood, and he has helped form a sports league in an attempt to pull kids away from the violence. More than Aristide's return, Franklin says he wants to see the conditions of life in the neighborhood improve.
When we talk about violence, everything you suffer is violence. Not being able to eat is also a system of violence. Not being able to find work is also a system of violence. It's not only when they shoot between each other, fights between popular masses. There's a reason someone who is hungry and doesn't have money in his pocket resorts to any means to deal with his problems.
Prime Minister Latortou himself, an economist and former UN official, has criticized the international community for its slowness in sending development aid. After Aristide was elected to a second term in 2000, international aid was frozen because of disputed parliamentary elections that same year. With the change in government, hopes were high that aid would finally come rushing in to rescue the foundering economy. especially after devastating floods and mudslides killed thousands in May and September 2004. But only around 10% of more than $1 billion in funds pledged by international donors and lenders last July has begun to be dispersed. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice spoke about this aid in her Senate confirmation hearing in January 2005.
Unfortunately, Haiti seems to be a place where natural and man-made disasters have come together in a really terrible way for the Haitian people. They do have a new chance now. They have a transitional government that is trying to arrange elections in the fall. We need to support that process. And we have had a successful donor conference recently with a $1 billion commitment. The United States is about $230 million of that.
I don't think aid is important for United States.
Marcus Garcia is a veteran Haitian journalist and host of a daily news program on Radio Melody.
Only when you have thousands of refugees, Haitian refugees, moving to Florida, only at that point they are interested.
In a poor suburb at the edge of Port-au-Prince, Rosemond sits in the shade outside the one-room cinder block house she is renting, surrounded by palm trees and banana trees. After living in Cité Soleil for 16 years, Rosemond, six of her children, three of their spouses, and one grandson came here last October, fleeing the violence that had engulfed the slum. It's cooler here than in Cité Soleil, Rosemond says, but she misses her old home, where she knew her neighbors and could buy sugar and other groceries on credit at local stores.
I am forced to get myself out of there. For my peace of mind, because I am sick. The noise of gunshots, neighborhoods fighting against neighborhoods, people fighting against other people, and I was forced to evacuate.
It was the first time Rosemond had left Cité Soleil. When Aristide was ousted in 1991, she joined the grassroots resistance movement against the military regime. Like hundreds of poor women, she was raped by one of the soldiers and paramilitaries who used rape as a tool of repression. But now, she says, things are even worse.
When Aristide left the first time after the coup d'etat, everyone was saying, Aristide must return, Aristide must return, Aristide must return. Constant protest. All neighborhoods were saying, Aristide must return, Aristide must return. Even the Americans realized they should return Aristide to us. The situation was like that because people had hope. But right now, the way the situation is, people feel that it's not the same as the first time. Everybody wants power this time. Everybody's out for themselves.
Rosemond and her family lived in Boston, the part of Cité Soleil that is controlled by Le Bagnier's gang. The other side of Cité Soleil is ruled by gangs loyal to Lavalas. All of them are accused of committing atrocities on both sides. One of Rosemond's sons, 18-year-old Mackinson, says he has had three friends killed in gang warfare. He says he refused to join Le Bagnier's gang, but he was finally handed a .38 caliber pistol and forced to fight. That, and the fear that Rosemond would be targeted because she is seen as a Lavalas supporter, prompted the family to flee. Ironically, Rosemond's other son, 23-year-old Jeremy, says he feels safer than ever in Boston because he is seen in the neighborhood as an anti-Lavalas activist. A university student working toward a degree in engineering, Jeremy says he was once a die-hard Aristide supporter. But he says he became disillusioned when Aristide's government began arming and paying gangs in Cité Soleil to combat the political opposition.
The majority of politicians always use Cité Soleil in order to achieve what they want. They do this because the people of Cité Soleil, the majority of people from there, are ignorant. They are not intellectuals. When they want them to change sides, they make them do so. When they want to use them in any way, they do so. They spend a lot of money in order to obtain what they want.
Jeremy joined the anti-Aristide student movement, which led street protests that helped push the former president from power. He was forced to flee Cité Soleil in fear of reprisals from armed Lavalas supporters. Later, however, he also became disenchanted with the student movement when he realized the students were being used by the wealthy opponents to Aristide, who controlled Group 184. He says student leaders have been bought off with jobs in the La Tortue government. And like many people in Cité Soleil, he says millionaire anti-Aristide leader Andrea Ped finances Le Bagnier with help from the police. Lebanier, unlike other pro-Aristide gang leaders, is not on the police's most wanted list.
This government is worse because they criticized Aristide because he did bad things, but they are doing the same.
Since Aristide's ouster, Appet has stayed clear of the public spotlight. He says he has no political ambitions and that he would continue to promote a so-called social contract, which he describes as a basic set of values that could serve as the foundation for future governments.
People that are poor suffer and are in the middle class say they need to know that nobody's going to get out of this mess if we don't create wealth. They need to accept the rules by which wealth is created, stability, and valoring, giving a value to those in the middle class and the upper class who can create wealth.
Murky waves wash onto the garbage-strewn shore of God's Village, the seaside slum where journalist Abdiazjan was killed. Residents here say criminal gangs terrorized the population for months before the police intervened in early January. But instead of driving away the gangs, people here say police killed innocent civilians and burned down their houses. Soon after, many families fled, leaving the slum eerily empty. Down a gravelly, empty street, a group of neighbors escape from the searing Caribbean sun under the shaded stoop of an abandoned cinder block house. They speak of unchecked crime, of the rising price of rice, of the lack of jobs, of the prohibitively high cost of sending their kids to school. They express little hope that presidential elections scheduled for next November will bring change.
We won't vote. When we vote, we suffer from misery in this country. We Haitian people, we are the poor people of the masses. We are the ones who are not given any money. What importance do we have in this country? All us Haitians have the same blood. The big shots and the poor, we're the same thing. But we are unemployed. We have nothing. Elections are held and the people put the president in power, senators in power, every authority in power, and after that, they forget us. They pick up 1,000 bourgeois who are similar to them and millionaires. Those who are already at the top go higher, and ourselves, we fall further down.
For Making Contact, I'm Reed Lindsay from Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to Melinda Miles, Figaro Joseph, Maria and Pierre Labossier, Jean Etienne, and Wawa. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production funded primarily by individual contributors. We are committed to providing a forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have suggestions for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a cassette or CD copy of the program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Justin Beck associate producer, Brashan McKee office manager, Dorian Taylor outreach and distribution, Peggy Law founding director, Norman Solomon senior advisor, David Barsamian national advisor, and I'm your host and production director, Amy Pomerleau.